KB.
This is Rage Gage.
Of Tenacious D, and you're listening to K-Dick. KDIC. Sophisticated programming for the children.
Interesting.
That doesn't seem right to give the dick to the children.
Mm-mm. Quite provocative.
Tremendous. Remember to rock and shred and tear and rip and love.
My middle name's Richard.
Late.
She just had to leave, and she could not tell me why. Something about a place she had to go on her own. She just had to leave, and I'm no one to tell her how to live her life with ghosts I don't believe in. Oh, I'm worried, sick, can't even think of sleeping. I gotta head out to find where she's hiding. She could be anywhere, this whole city's her home. I pray this town loves her just as much as I do. Oh, and then the fear hits me, she might be all alone in the cold, or even worse, being with someone she don't know.
Hey, what's up, Grinnell? Daniel's not able to make it tonight, so he has a pre-made show. Hope you all enjoy. Here it comes. Racing Boundaries is a special deal. It's going to feature an interview with Joshua Bennett in it. My name is Dylan Gray. If you want to check out my show later on tonight, it's at midnight, Corporation St. People. Anyway, enjoy Daniel's show. We're Racing Boundaries coming at you live on KDIC 88.5 FM.
Welcome to Erasing Boundaries. I am Daniel Kisslinger, coming to you as always from high above the D-Hall in the second Erasing Boundaries show. As we speak and you hear my voice, I am frantically rehearsing for Neverland Players performing this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Get your tickets at the Bucksbaum box office. It's going to be wild. But in the meantime, we have a very special Erasing Boundaries show for you today. Joining me is spoken word extraordinaire Joshua Bennett, as well as whatever music Joshua Bennett's listening to these days, here on Erasing Boundaries, 88.5 KDIC FM and KDIC.grinnell.edu.
Though I heard the sound of the sun, and I lost myself too. All we tried to be, to recede into the sea, and open our eyes on the coast, and to not feel lost anymore, to stand firm like the roots of a tree, sleeping through everything. And these instruments go on after I'm gone, trying to make what we hold, and it comes out in song. I missed myself.
the things we tried to be before we fell into the sea and forgot all of our names that echo, and these words go on, long after we're gone, trying to be what we see, but it comes out all wrong. The dust settles the meter of the song that I sing, loses time with the air that I breathe through my lungs. As the dust settles the meter of the song that I sing, loses time with the air that I breathe through my lungs. As the dust settles.
Most days, New York City makes it very difficult to fall in love. The chaos of all those car horns and crowded streets turns the morning into a battlefield and makes me forget what it feels like to be held. But the night we met, the skyline smiled for us. The moon wept for joy and showered our bodies with light as we glided through the streets, every step perfectly choreographed to the rhythm of our restless hearts. I know that it's hard. And we both dreamed of being the sort of famous they make t-shirts about before the world swallowed our childhoods whole and convinced us that we could never be stars, only the dust they leave in their wake when they fall from the sky. But if I had one wish to ask for when this life of mine finally supernovas into memory, I would ask that everyone on Earth could see the world the way it was that night. When every train in the subway was a chariot to our favorite spot downtown, and the sky was just a shimmering blanket to keep us warm when the wind got a little too bold for your liking. So maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe all this chaos is really a symphony that the city composed just for us, an ode to the lighthouses glimmering in your eyes, a timeless anthem that we just can't stop dancing to.
I am here with a very special guest. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, everybody. My name is Joshua Brandon Bennett. I'm a spoken word poet, and I'm glad to be here.
We're glad you're here, too. I'm still, like, coming down energy-wise from the performance that you just put on in Herrick.
Oh, wow.
That was pretty unbelievable.
Thank you, man. I mean, it's just really a blessing, honestly, just to be here. I had no idea what to expect coming to Iowa. There are rumors of what Iowa is like. I must say, these definitely, you guys outdid everything I could have imagined for what the show tonight was going to look like. So,
cool. Well, glad to hear it. How'd you get into the world of spoken word poetry?
The world of spoken word poetry. I've told this story a couple of different times today. So I guess we'll start with Naima. So Naima is a good friend of mine now. Her last name will not be mentioned for reasons that will become clear later. But so I had a crush on her when I was about 15 years old. And she invites me to this poetry reading at Sarah Lawrence College. And so I go. I'm like excited, whatever. I get there. She's like sitting nowhere near me. She's like somewhere over here. And I'm there with my friend Rodney. And but what ends up happening is over the next 2 hours, I see a group from this organization called Urban Word NYC. And it's some of the best poetry I've ever heard. It was kids from all age ranges, folks in their early 20s, people that were 17 like I was. And they were just up there telling their story, impassioned, beautiful writing. And just unafraid. I think that's what really struck me, how unafraid everybody was to tell their story up there. And after that, I went home that weekend and wrote my first piece.
Had you done, maybe not in spoken word format, but had you done writing? Had that been something that was a big part of your life before this?
Yeah. I definitely always wrote like short poems. And my mom said I used to do sermons when I was five. What was it, five? I would like come home from church and like do these like, I guess, remixes of what I just heard. It was interesting. I was a weird kid, man. Like, people think it's a joke. I was a really weird kid. So yeah, I wrote some stuff.
Well, welcome to the rest of us.
Yeah, seriously, right? That's how I felt though at Grinnell. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys are so so quirky in a non-corny way. Like,
right.
Sincerely odd. And I like that a lot.
Coupled with, like, I mean, part of the biggest thing that drew me here was it's, like, that quirkiness coupled with, just enthusiasm for whether it's spoken word, whether it's whatever you're reading, whatever it is. Yeah. It's, like, just, like, a genuine enthusiasm.
Yeah,
and totally. That definitely came out today both from the audience and from you. I mean, the thing for me, and I'm wondering if you can, I don't know if this is something you can even explain, but how quickly you can go from having everyone cracking up to having everyone just like completely silent, focused on what you're saying. Is that deliberate? Is that just how it's kind of worked out in terms of this stuff?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think now more so than before, I try to balance my sets in terms of, because I always want everybody to have fun. I always want my shows to be an enjoyable time. But at the same time, I think with pieces like Derek, pieces like Jesus Riding Shotgun that are a little heavier in content, I also want folks to really leave thinking differently or to realize that there's another aspect to something they thought they knew very well, whether it's about Christianity, basketball, race relations in the inner city. Like, I always want people to feel like there's a new spin put on something they thought they knew very well and were familiar with. So I don't know. I mean, part of it was just, I didn't really plan it out that way. I mean, to see people respond that way is really beautiful, though, and it's encouraging. And you guys were super attentive and engaged, so it was beautiful to see.
Oh, in terms of the, you talked kind of about the, you just mentioned this balance of levity and then addressing, you know, not just like not funny issues, but serious issues, things that really impact people, whether it's religion, whether it's race relations. What's the process like figuring out how to portray those in a way that, one, feels honest to your experience and is what you really want to be saying, and two, also will help, will people will respond to? Is that part, are you thinking about, well, will people like this, or is it just what you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question, dude. Like, in terms of just thinking about audience response, right? And I think the spoken word poet in particular is in a really difficult situation because you sort of rock off audience response. Like, you really want people to feel what you're saying. But I think an advice I would always give young writers would be to write from the heart, to write what you know and to write your story, because I think there's something universal in the personal. So I think sort of naturally people respond to it because it really happened to you. I think when you start fictionalizing narratives to get an audience response, that's when I think you get in a dangerous place. And you may feel yourself, even if you don't fall flat, I feel like emotionally it'll sort of naturally fall flat because you don't mean it. So I think it's really important to always have sort of really personal narratives that mean a lot to you, whether they're funny, right? Because I think the comedic narratives mean a lot to you too. I mean, folks like Richard Pryor, Chappelle, I mean, they remind us of that, right? Like, Dave Chappelle's funny because it's like, some of it's outlandish, but some of it's just real stuff. Like, haha, that's really happening to people. That's really funny.
And then you're seeing it performed.
Right.
And just the fact that it's being performed is what a big part of what makes it funny.
Exactly.
It's like something that you might see every day, you know, especially with the examples you gave, it makes me think, and with the performance you gave, it makes me think about going back to the race relations stuff especially. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not as pivotal part of my experience from mm-hmm. that perspective as it is for you, but mm-hmm. having also grown up in basically the same city. Yeah. Not Yonkers is a different yeah. story than New York City.
It's close, though. Yeah.
But I don't know. It's interesting to me thinking about, mitigating that risk, the response from people. You know, when you come to Iowa, mm. most people haven't experienced that in the same way.
Yeah.
So how do you make it, you know, like you were saying, honest to what you were saying?
Yeah.
And, or to your experience, and then also still gravitate with them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess part of it is trusting your audience, sort of trusting that even if folks have never experienced something, that they'll see that someone else has had that experience and that they'll want to come along for the ride. It's funny. I think I'm in front of a diverse sort of range of audiences. So, like, if I'm in a prison in Philly, I'll do the same poems that I'll do, like, at Grinnell College, which is interesting because I think my experience is sort of, like, taken from all of these places. Like, I've always been in predominantly white educational institutions, though I lived in a neighborhood that was primarily Latino and came from a black family and went to a black church. So in terms of just, like, having all these different cultural perspectives, I think they're sort of naturally just swirling around in me anyway. And I think my pieces hopefully have something for anyone. So whereas someone might see their actual personal lived experience in it, for someone else that has not lived that particular experience, I hope that they can see a different view on the world they live in because they're now hearing the other come into their personal space. So that's something I want to do for everybody.
Right.
I mean, and that's one of the major goals for both writing and performance.
Right.
I mean, one thing that I'm, you talked about humanities kids. I'm certainly on that end of the
yes,
spectrum.
Yes, sir.
That's
the way to go.
But I hear people talk about, she's one of them, okay. A friend in the studio, right. Talk about the idea of, yeah, literature is well and good and it has merit, but you know, what real power does it have?
Yeah.
And then, and dismiss it that way. And then I look at, you know, the response that you got from people today. And that just seems like power to me. Mm-hmm. I know that's not really a question,
yeah.
But that, I mean, how that. Do you see, how do you see the merit in what you do?
Really good. I mean, I guess being in a doctoral program in English has affected the way I think about this question now, because you sort of sit in these 3-hour seminars where we'll talk about Plato. Right. And you leave there and you're like, well, that was interesting. But how did anything I learned about the dialectic today, how can that affect the various ways in which people are oppressed across the world? Right. So I think there's a very real critique that your friend is making in terms of how can this novel feed somebody? Right. And ostensibly it can't. Right. But what I would argue is that there's something that fundamentally happens when people tell stories and when they share their experiences. And I just think that there's something that happens ontologically to folks when they know that they're loved and when they're given hope. And I think for a lot of people that does matter. I wouldn't do poetry in prison if I didn't think it mattered, because I think it actually makes prison less like prison when you get the chance to write poetry and listen to music and realize that your voice is heard. So I guess part of what we're talking about here is also affect, right? How do feelings matter in the real world? And I think they do. I think they
right.
always have.
And sometimes they get pushed aside, especially in certain academic contexts.
Yeah.
This idea of, okay, well, what you think is well and good, but it, here we need the facts.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you can't back up what you're saying, then you, that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But I would say, and it sounds like from what you're saying too, that one way to back that up can be with... Okay, so this moves people. This
yeah.
makes people feel. This makes people think about something. And I think musicians do that all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and in some ways, because of the way that spoken word, but especially yours, is structured, I kind of always go back to music just because so much of it is rhythm-driven.
Yeah.
And it would be really different if someone was just standing up there putting it together. If the rhythm is that powerful, is that just kind of extemporaneous as you're performing, or is that part of the preparation?
That's funny. I think... Your question about rhythm is a good one, because every time I get on stage, it's sort of a new experience, to the extent that I wonder if I ever really do the same poem twice, right? Because I'm a different person sort of every day. And I actually think the rhythm actually does change. I think if you've seen me do 10 things any of the past 5 times I've done it, it's a completely different piece. The way I move my hands, the way I actually say the words, pauses are different based on an audience response.
I mean, right? I know I saw that. In part of my preparation, I watched the YouTube videos,
okay, cool.
of course.
Thank you for that. That's always helpful.
And I definitely saw that. I mean, and that's part of what makes spoken word so interesting and resonate with people, I would say, is as an art form, what you're saying is really only half of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the performance side.
My soul cries out for you. constantly creates us into something new. Jesus, surely you will find us, surely our Messiah will make all things new, will make all things new. My soul cries out, my soul cries out for you. These bones cry out, these dry bones cry for you. Never moves on me.
Said from New York, is that where you're based out of these days?
Now I live in Princeton, New Jersey, with my roommate Robing, who's really nice. He's a PhD candidate in math. He's from China, nice guy. And we live in a 2-bedroom house, and we have no furniture and no internet, so it's good times.
Oh yeah, yeah. Are you performing in the Princeton / New York / Iowa? I guess.
Yeah. No Princeton scene, from what I know. But yeah, this is my first college gig in a while, so it was great to get my stage legs back, with such a good audience. My next two shows, I think, are at Colorado College and RIT, where I'm slated to perform with Cornel West, so I'm really excited about
that. Wow.
Yeah, that's like a dream come true. I actually saw him at Princeton the other day. It was so funny because he teaches there.
Right.
So I just saw him on the street and I was like, what's happening right now? Why are you in front of this like bakery? Such a cool guy.
And he does, obviously he teaches there, so he's a presence there, but he does so much stuff with colleges and universities across the country. Not to shout out the Twitter, I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
And his whole thing is like, right now I'm in Chicago speaking at the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
Next day it's like, now I'm at, UT Austin.
Yeah.
You mentioned for you, performing at colleges.
Yeah.
What's the difference between performing for a college audience, especially as someone who, though you're not still undergrad, but as a student?
Yeah.
Is that a different objective, different feel?
I mean, to me, I can't really imagine anything more fun than performing for a college crowd, to be honest. The enthusiasm that's there, even the hope. Like, I really just think about, when I think about undergrads, I think about that sort of formative period where you still have this absolute hope that what you're learning and what you're hoping to become can actually transform the world.
And then you become a grad student and get jaded.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm so serious. I think the world sort of beats that out of you. You read certain stuff and you're like, oh, man, a lot of my friends just sort of have a lot of money now and don't care about the stuff we cared about at undergrad, wow. Right? And it's, I don't know, it's so rewarding to get to sit with, like, just a group of young people who still have that fire, right? Not that all grad students don't, but I think it does change as folks get older, just naturally. For some of us, we fall away. And so to have that chance to be around a large group of young people is always exciting for me.
What are you studying in your doctoral program?
So I'm in the English department.
Attaboy.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's all right. It's interesting. I love Princeton. You guys are great. I study 20th century African-American literature with a specific focus on disability studies and performance studies. So like the Stevie Wonder poem comes out of research, actually. Like my research interests really lie in sort of what disabled performers and disabled characters in literature teach us about human subjectivity and citizenship and what it means to be a person. And, yeah.
Wow. Well, and I saw, I mean, on that theme specifically, in my YouTube clip watching, I saw the performance you did at the White House, which, talk a little bit about that poem, because talking about a personal poem, I mean that.
Tamara's Opus. Probably a poem that's probably closest to my heart. I wrote it when I was 19, I guess. That's weird. I wrote Tamara's Opus when I was 19. It's about my older sister who's deaf, about what it meant for me to just grow up in a family where everyone else was at least conversing in sign language besides myself. Barack Obama, that's just crazy. It's kind of surreal that I got the chance to meet him. But so I just got the phone call one day. I was studying for finals at Penn. And it's like, hey.
Hi, this is Barack?
Yeah, no, it wasn't him that called. But James Cass, the head of Youth Speaks, which is a great organization doing work out on the West Coast, was like, hey, you know, we got this opportunity, bringing some poets to the White House. Do you want to come? I was like, yeah, I'll think about it. You know, let me get back to you. No, I said right away. I was like, yeah, of course. And he was like, okay, somebody will call you with details. And then they said they wanted a piece about communication. They needed it to be 2 minutes. And I had about a week. So Tamara's Opus in its original form is probably about 3 minutes, 30 seconds. Edited down to 2 minutes, rememorized it. And did it in the White House.
Well, let's hear the YouTube of Tamara's Opus from the White House performance. This is Joshua Bennett here in the studio with me at KDIC FM 88.5 and KDIC.Grinnell.edu.
Tamara has never listened to hip-hop, never danced to the rhythm of raindrops or fallen asleep to a chorus of chirping crickets. She has been deaf for as long as I've been alive. And ever since the day I first turned 5, my father has said, Joshua, nothing is wrong with Tamara. God just makes some people different. And at that moment, those 9 letters felt like hammers, swung gracefully by unholy hands to shatter my stained glass innocence into shards that can never be pieced back together or do anything more than sever the ties between my sister and I. I waited, was patient numberless years, anticipating the second her ears would open like lotuses and allow my sunlight senses to seep into her insides, make her remember all of those conversations we must have had in heaven back when God handpicked us to be sibling souls centuries ago. I still remember her 20th birthday. Readily recall my awestruck 11-year-old eyes as I watched deaf men and women of all ages dance in unison to the vibrations of speakers booming so loud that I imagine angels chastising us for disturbing their worship with such beautiful blasphemy. Until you have seen a deaf girl dance, you know nothing of passion. There was a barricade between us that I never took the time to destroy. Never for even a moment thought to pick up a book and look up the sign for sister, for family, for goodbye. I will see you again someday. Remember the face of your little brother. It is only now I see that I was never willing to put in the extra effort to love her properly. So as the only person in my family who is not fluent in sign language, I've decided to take this time to apologize to Mara. I am sorry for my silence, but true love knows no frequency. And so I will use these hands to speak volumes that can never be contained within the boundaries of sound waves. I will shout at the top of my fingertips until digits dance and relay these mental messages directly to your soul. I know that there is no poem that can make up for all the time we have lost. So please, if you can, just listen. Thank you.
Joshua Bennett here on KDIC FM 88.5 and KDIC.grinnell.edu.
Yes, sir.
So that you kept saying that was so weird. What is it that's so weird about that?
What? Like, I haven't watched that video really. So, like, I don't know. Just really remembering what that moment was like for me. I can't remember a time I was ever that afraid before going on stage. Mm-hmm. Like, well, one time, actually. I can't remember.
What? I got to ask. What was that one time?
This was the NAACP Image Awards that same year. I think it was Beyonce just destroys her run through. Like, just really just comes out. There's like wind blowing in her hair, but we're inside. Like, so there's no real wind. And then Beyonce just does like her mic check and just rips it. And then it's like me and like my two friends doing this group piece for Russell Simmons. We completely forget it. We forget like the whole thing during sound check. And so we're about to perform. I was just scared. Like, I had none of my wits about me. They were like, if you guys mess this up live on the air, we're going to go to commercial. And like, I'm 19. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, this is my one shot, you know, to like do anything with my life. That's really how I felt. And so
you're like, I'm used to watching the commercials.
Exactly. Like, yeah. You're going to cut and go to commercial. I was like, that'd be so embarrassing. And there were like thousands of people. Like, it was this whole theater. I think the Shrine Auditorium just filled to the brim with people. So it was nuts. But I was as scared, if not more scared, at the White House just because it's like Barack Obama. And right. I'm like, voted for the dude. You're in here. My mom is here. So it's like my mom and like the president. It's like my mom's right here. Joe Biden's right here. President right over here.
Who did you make more eye contact with?
I'm pretty sure I looked at Barack. I had to, because I was like, oh, it's Barack Obama. Barack Obama, he's in the audience. He's like, come a feet away, it's Barack Obama. I mean, Saul Williams was there. So, I mean, there are a couple of people that I really look up to. Saul Williams was there. He was there. Zach Braff. Garden State's one of my favorite movies. So Zach
Me
Braff
too.
Dude.
Oh, my goodness.
So good. So good. Who is not secretly looking for Natalie Portman in that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yep.
Who else was
That's
there?
The goal.
It has to be, right? She has to be, like, the exemplar for, like, awkward, cute women on motorcycles. So
cut
fun.
The music up. Yeah. You had a lot of crooks try to steal your heart. Never really had luck. Couldn't ever figure out how to love. How to love. You had a lot of moments that didn't last forever. You in a corner trying to put it together. How to love. How to love. For a second you were here. Now you over there. It's hard not to stare. The way you move in your body like you never had a love. Never had a love. When you was just a young and your looks were so precious. But now you grown up so fly. It's like a blessing. But you can't have a man look at you for 5 seconds without you being insecure. You never credit yourself. So when you got older, it seems like you came back 10 times over. Now you're sitting here in this damn corner, looking through all your thoughts and looking over your shoulder. See, you had a lot of crooks try to steal your heart. Never really had luck. Couldn't never figure out how to love. Now you in this corner trying to put it together. How to love. How to love. For a second you were here. Now you over there. It's hard not to stare. The way you're moving your body like you never had a love. How to love. Oh, when you had a lot of dreams that
home to visions. The fact that you saw the world affected all your decisions. But it wasn't your fault, wasn't in your intentions to be the one here talking to me, be the one listening. But I admire your popping bottles and dipping just as much as you admire your bartending and stripping, baby. So don't be mad, nobody else tripping. You see a lot of crooks and them crooks still crook. You see a lot of crooks try to steal your heart. Never really had luck, couldn't never figure out how to love, how to love. See, you had a lot of moments that didn't last forever. Now you in this corner trying to put it together. How to love. Far from the usual, far from the usual. You see, I had a lot of crooks try to steal your heart. Never really had luck, couldn't never figure out how to love, how to love. See, I had a lot of moments that didn't last forever. Now you in this corner trying to put it together.
You mentioned Beyonce going back a little bit, and I gotta go back to the music. Who are you listening to these days?
What's the Joshua Bennett playlist? The Middle East. They actually broke up. It's very sad. But I really like their music. The Darkest Side, check that out. Blood. Sounds really morbid.
Wow.
Good music though, dude. Kendrick Lamar.
Yes.
Keisha's song. Songs on repeat, man. He's an interesting guy.
I just played that on my show this past week in the opening.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude.
I played that in High Power on my show.
One of the more lyrically complex MCs I've ever heard.
And theme. I mean, the way that he balanced, you know, he really, his whole thing is that he's born out of the tradition of West Coast hip hop, which has all those, the NWA gangster side to it.
Yeah.
But then he's also there breaking his album up into chapters and each chapter has a different theme, and one theme is Keisha's song, and one theme is, I mean, it's just the talk about dexterity. Yeah, he's on repeat on mine, too.
He's a beast, dude. Lyrically, he's ridiculous. So I'm listening to them. What else? Bon Iver. What else am I listening to? I mean, yeah, that's mostly it. Just How to Love by Lil Wayne is actually still stuck in my head. And it's only because that's such, like, a tender song. It's so tender for Wayne. Like, oh, all these men have broken your heart. You never learned how to love. But I'm going to, like, help you. Oh,
but really? You're buying into that?
I mean, I'm buying it only because he doesn't have to do that at this point in his career, you know? And granted, it could be a cheesy pop song intended to help him rise up the charts. Fine. That's ostensibly true. Or potentially possible. But
still gets you thinking about that stuff.
Yes, and I appreciate tenderness in hip hop because I think that's actually really rare. And I think sometimes what we call misogyny is actually heartbreak, and sort of like these very troubled men actually working through really problematic relationships they've had with women for a long time, or with their fathers, or with any number of folks. So I mean, Wayne has also been a really fascinating character for me for a while, and Gungor, it's a really interesting band. Really interesting worship band that make like really beautiful big songs, and Soup John Stevens, that's, I'll leave it there. He's like one of my favorite musicians, period.
Yeah. fancy girls on Long Beach Boulevard, flagging down all of these flashy cars.
And Lord knows she's beautiful. Lord knows the usual's leaving her body sore. She take the little change she make to fix her nail cuticles. Lipstick is suitable to make you fiend for more. She play Mr. Shakur. That's her favorite rapper bumping. Brenda's got a baby while a pervert yelling at her. And she captured features of a woman. But only 17, the 7 cars star hunking. She start running like Flo-Jo. Don't care if they Joe Blow, if they got money to blow. A blowjob is a sure go. And sure enough, don't see a dime of dirty dollars. Just give it all to her daddy, but she don't know her father. That's ironic, see a block away from Luda's Park. I seen the El Camino parked, and in her heart she hated there. But in her mind she made it where nothing really matters. So she hit the backseat, Rosa Parks never a factor when she's making ends meet.
Fancy girls on Long Beach Boulevard, flagging down all of these flashy cars.
And Lord knows she's beautiful, Lord knows the usual's leaving her body sore. Her anatomy is God's temple, and it's quite simple. Her castle is about to be destroyed. She's always paranoid, watching the law inside the streets. Undercovers and dummies that look like decoys. Remember Sergeant let her slide, said if he seen what's between her thighs, he'd compromise. To no surprise, she took the ultimatum round the alleyway and gave him a warm welcome that felt him right below the navel. Though he was wired up like a pair of jumping cables, his eyes was closed shut, prior charges he had waved him. It was a block away from Luda's Park. I seen a squad car parked, and in her heart she hated there. But in her mind she made it where nothing really matters. So she hit the backseat, cause Rosa Parks never a factor when she topping off police.
Fancy girls on Long Beach Boulevard, flagging down all of these flashy cars.
And Lord knows she's beautiful, Lord knows the usual's leaving her body sore. As she busts down like a 12 bunk on tour, she suddenly realized she'll never escape the allure of a black man, white man, needing satisfaction. At first it became a practice, but now she's numb to it. Sometimes she wonder if she can do it like nuns do it, but she never heard of Catholic religion or sinner's redemption. That sounds foolish, and you can blame it on the mother for letting her boyfriends like Andy under her cover. 10 months before she was 10, he moved in, and that's when he touched her. This motherfucker is the fucking reason why Keisha rushing through the block away from Luda's Park. I seen her El Camino parked, and in her heart she hated there. But in her mind she made it where nothing really matters. Still she hit the backseat, then caught a knife inside the bladder, left her dead raped in the street. Keisha Zone. My little sister 11, I looked her right in the face the day that I wrote this song, set her down and pressed play.
Fancy girls on Long Beach Boulevard, flagging down all of these flashy cars. Fancy girls on Long Beach Boulevard, oh, flagging down all of those flashy cars.
Joshua Bennett, of course, just killed it in Herrick Chapel tonight. Look him up on YouTube. You want to give any promotional information?
Yeah.
I'm on Twitter, at Sir Josh Bennett. That's SirJoshBennett. Also on my fan page on Facebook. Please hit that up and like it. And just show me love. Say nice things, please.
Well, you're saying nice things to them, so they might as well do the courtesy of responding.
That's
exactly
what I'm saying. Send me beats, too, if you want. That would be fun. So, yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us and for coming out to Grinnell.
Honor and pleasure, too. One of the top 5 shows easily I've ever done. So
there you
thank
go.
You guys.
Joshua Bennett in the studio with me on KDIC FM 88.5 and KDIC.Grinnell.edu.
Yeah.
Dear Stevie, you are the only musician that my father ever talks about. Tells me that back when he fought in Vietnam, he would play your song for Once in My Life on repeat. Says that against the backdrop of all that destruction, it reminded him of how much he loved being alive. The first time I saw you live, my veins turned to jumper cables. The air was so thick with laughter I could barely move. A woman draped in a whole different genre of beautiful, seated just one row in front of me and dancing like her entire body was a playground perfectly designed for her bones to double dutch in. It was that sort of night. Our bodies came unhinged, split like the kiss of axe blade and timber. The moment your fingertips glided across that Triton, the keys turned to keys, and suddenly the stadium was no stadium at all, but a dance hall in 1970s Georgia. You, once again a 13-year-old boy, harmonica blooming from your lips, Jim Crow, weeping at the back of the venue, unable to breathe. Once you let all that flame in your throat go free, every time you sing the word sunshine, I rethink what it means to see. Figure, it must be something even more grand than the split-second waltz between iris and light that so many of us take for granted. When I was 9, you told me that rainbows were ribbons in the sky, which led me to believe that the heavens must be a gift, the sunrise, just a billion birthday candles set to blaze every time the sun was born anew from the womb of the sea. You can't just say things like that to kids. It makes them dream, carves their world into a canvas where every shade of human is acceptable, where my little brother, diagnosed with autism at age 3, can sit at a drum set and coax the thunder from its belly until it speaks twice as loudly as all those voices that told us to focus on what he could not do, where every other week I can sit in a classroom an hour outside of London and be reminded by a group of teenagers with disabilities that they are made in God's image too, that our destinies are not chained to what this world says about our bodies and how they should work. I have always been told that the eyes are the windows to the soul, but maybe your soul is a window for our eyes. Every song, like a beautiful mirror perfectly placed at the corners of your mind. The one thing I know for sure about the wedding I hope to have one day soon is that I want your music to be playing the moment I see my bride. Her dress billowing behind her like a waterfall made of silk. The chorus to Isn't She Lovely filling the sanctuary like a gentle mist. My father is seated in the front row. He is reciting every word from memory and smiling the way a man only can when he has seen death and come away dancing. Thank you for the hits, my friend, for the way you have used your gift. I lift a glass to your courage. And I offer you this, a handwritten letter from the heart, a song in the key of love. Thank you.
know